Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
It's 8:11 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour. This is KPCW. The Sutterville Basin Planning Commission starting off with a site visit tomorrow, 4:30, at the former snowed-in Colby School. On the phone with a rundown of the agenda, I have Staff Planner Sean Lewis. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, let's talk briefly about the site visit. What's happening here? This is formerly known as the Snowden and the Colby School, and do you have an application for the building?
I'm not sure if we do or not. We have a proposal to put in some commercial yoga studio type thing there, some physical activity things. I'm not exactly sure of all the details of it, but the applicants are going on with a site visit with the Planning Commission to just go look at it and see what the viability and kind of get a preliminary look at what this plan may entail.
Okay, but there's new owners with it, right, with the building?
As far as I'm aware, yeah.
All right. Let's see. The public hearing for the Old Ranch Road Estate Subdivision final plat has been moved to a December meeting. Let's talk about this West Meadows Loop Road. Not much of an item, just a plat amendment in Silver Springs to combine some lot?
Yeah, so these were lots that were combined by a deed in 1988. They're 2.5 lots there in Meadow Wild. And in 1988, they built a single-family structure on the lot there. And what they've recently come to the office to apply to extend a deck on the property, just added a little deck to the single family home, and the deck would not conform to current standards because the house is built across the property line, so they can't meet the setbacks. So they're doing a plat amendment of 2.5 lots. It's lot 3738 in the north half of 39. And again, these are all under the same ownership that was done by deed. They're just formalizing it by amending the plat, and then the end result is they can have a bigger deck.
All right. Also, the Shadow Mountain subdivision here, again, not a big deal, but it is a plat amendment to deal with a sewer easement. It's on Old Ranch Road, and it was, my understanding, approved about 10 years ago as a Presbyterian church and then sold as a single-family home.
That is correct. So there's a vacant lot there, and the subdivision was approved in the early 2000s, and the lot one had always been owned by the Presbyterian Church, and they have recently sold that lot to a private property owner, and there's a sewer easement that's kind of a triangular shape that runs across the front part of the property between Shadow Mountain Lane and Old Ranch Road. And then there's a stub that goes from the main trunk line to the middle of the property. And the way that the site plan is set up for this new single-family home, they would like to remove that sewer easement that extends into the middle. So it wouldn't take the trunk line easement out, just the lateral going to the main part of the site. And then what this would do is allow them to build the house across that. Where the church was not planning to build on that particular area. Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District has sent a letter or an email to us saying that they are okay with removing that portion of the sewer easement. So there's no boundary changes. There's nothing else going on with the lot. It's just removing a small portion of a sewer easement on the property to allow for the construction of a single-family home.
All right, and then also a proposed expansion of the Rocky Mountain Power Substation near Bear Hollow. How much of an expansion are we talking about?
Close to an acre. Leslie, there's two different land swap agreements that have been entered into it, and the end result is Rocky Mountain Power has acquired about just under an acre's worth of land to the west of the existing substation facility there. And they're going to be expanding that to increase capacity for the Snyderville Basin area. And along with that is not just the expansion, but there are seven poles that will be relocated or realigned to accommodate that fix or that expansion. Pardon me. So there shouldn't be too much visually that most people can see. The design is pretty benign from our visual corridor of 224. Obviously, if you get back up behind there and up at the Olympic Park, you'll see it a little bit more. But the design is supposed to blend in and be very similar to the facility that's already there. And what this does is it increases capacity to the so they can accommodate the 138 kilovolt lines that are they're starting to upgrade to, which just increases the capacity of the power and reliability of the power grid here in the Snyderville Basin area.
All right. So the visual impact, I mean, we've got the neighbors here, what, Bear Hollow, the LDS Church property, any impact?
Yeah, that's where it is. And then the LDS Church property has been involved in the land swaps. They're okay with it. It abuts the open space on the Boyer property to the north of the Park City Tech Center. So there's a little bit of the swap there. And then the Bear Hollow to the east. But again, all of the expansion is going west away from Bear Hollow.
All right. Staff recommendation on it?
We're recommending approval. It meets the code. The biggest issue is that the Rocky Mountain Power is requested to maintain the landscaping as the natural there and not have formal landscaping in. Of course, they don't have water facilities to go up in there. And we've got approval or consent from the Snyderville Basin the Special Recreation District to keep that in the natural state. And that just keeps it. We actually walked the Run Amok Trail with Basin Rec and the Rocky Mountain Power, and really the best way to maintain the visual landscape there is to keep it as natural as possible. So we're going to ask that the Planning Commission not require formal, you know, landscaping that they might at other locations.
Okay. Sean, anything else you want to mention?
No, just encourage everybody to come out and speak on any projects that they feel inclined to do so. We encourage all sorts of public participation.
Okay. Sean, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Summit County Planner Sean Lewis, again, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting in regular session tomorrow. They'll begin with a site visit to the old Colby School starting at 4:30, then meet back at the Rich and Services Building for the regular meeting starting at 6. It's 8:19 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the local news hour on KPCW. Well, the cold temperatures, a bit of snow, have made it to Utah. In the studio with an outlook on the upcoming winter, I have National Weather Service hydrologist Brian McInerney. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, if we could, maybe we can just get a quick recap of the water year. Of course, the new water year starting October 1. Any idea how we ended up? I mean, driving by Deer Creek and Jordan now, things look like they got drawn down pretty good.
Yeah, when you look at the runoff, the spring snowmelt runoff that starts in April and goes through the end of July, we were probably less than 50% in most places. We didn't do well at all. We had a really poor snowpack, and then we had a really good May rain event that lasted for a good chunk of the month. And that really helped us out in the fact that the farmers didn't use their stored water, that the water that was in the reservoir stayed there, and that helped out a great deal. We had a somewhat wet summertime. We had good monsoonal flow. So again, people aren't using their stored water. They're using rainwater. So overall, we came out behind again 4 years in a row. But it could have been much, much worse if we didn't get the wet May and we didn't get the rains that we saw during the summer months.
So does that mark it, though, as a fourth year of drought?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been in a drought condition, really. The high-pressure ridge set up about the fall months of 2011, and that's been the dominant weather feature, and it's really shunted any weather during the winter months to accumulate an above-average snowpack, and that's been our problem. And hopefully this year, with our strong El Nino, we won't see that.
All right. Too early to tell, though, what El Nino is going to do?
Yeah, if you look at where we are, all El Niños are not alike. And if you have a weak to moderate El Nino, and El Nino is the warming of the sea surface temperatures in the equatorial Pacific. And if you have a weak to moderate warming, there's really no good correlation. If you have a strong El Nino, then there's better correlation that the desert southwest becomes cool and wet and the Pacific Northwest becomes warmer and drier. We've got a very strong El Nino forecasted for this year, and it could be a record breaker. If that's the case, then you can put your finger on that and say, in the past, Utah has been wetter than normal when we've had this condition. The sample size itself is very small, so we have to take that into account. We also have to take into account that we've got a different atmosphere. It's changed But the years that we had a very strong El Nino was 82, 83, when we had the flooding down State Street, and 1997, which was really a big snow year. Again, it's a very small sample size, but if you were going to wager, you wouldn't wager much, but you'd wager that we're going to be wetter. But it looks like with climate change the way it is and our warming temperatures, last year we broke heat records all during the winter, and it was just one after another. Temperatures are typically above normal, so the feeling is we're going to be warmer than normal, but hopefully wetter than normal. And at this point, we'll take average. That would be wonderful.
Well, it's funny how El Nino, I mean, I was in Southern California recently, and it's like everybody's talking about it. Just because it's a big deal for them, maybe some wet weather finally.
Yeah, the correlation for California is much bigger, because what happens is the jet stream becomes a directly west event. It comes west to east and comes right across the Sierras and the Cascades to some extent. And so they do much better. The correlation for Utah is unknown right now.
So when do we really start to see the effects?
Well, I think we're seeing them right now. The two systems that we had moved through, it was unfortunate, but it's almost working against our favor. There was a really nice low about a week ago that came off from the up in the Gulf of Alaska and moved down, but then it tracked down the coast in that very warm ocean water. And the meteorologists, when we were talking about it, they were indicating that maybe the waters are so much warmer that low got fed some energy from that and then tracked farther down the coast, and it separated from the normal flow, and that's what caused the split. And we're seeing that with this storm now. If the low would have tracked the way it typically does, we could have gotten some really good snow last week and this week. But instead, when it hit the coast, it tracked south, pulled the mean flow pattern away, and so we got what was in the middle.
Wow, just how the water temperature, huh, can change the weather pattern.
It's really warm off the coast right now, all the way down to Baja and then into the equatorial Pacific. So that whole area is quite warm.
So in terms of, though, this storm, I mean, you're saying, are we going to see a split? Because we certainly saw some snow in Flagstaff and we saw some snow in Jackson.
Yeah, we're splitting as we speak, and it's going to split through today and tomorrow. That's why the snow amounts are so low. The main rotating weather feature is south of us, where the mean flow is north of us. So if you look, the Sierras are doing quite well with regard to snow. And then Colorado, down in the southern areas of Colorado in the mountains, they're doing quite well. And that's a direct result of those two systems. It's early, but it'd be nice to start things off, just because the last 4 years we started off poorly and we ended up poorly. So let's kind of get a jump on it, is the feeling.
Okay, so I know that you only like to forecast a few days out, but I mean, if you were to look,
you'd say we're going to be a wetter than normal, and there's a better than average chance of that.
All right. Want to also ask you about we had reported on yesterday, the new Park City Weather Observation Station located there at the Park City Library Field. So what was your role in getting that?
Really, this radio station was a major reason we have that. I was on with Chris Cherniak in This Green Earth, and I said we don't have a climate station, a long-term record, because the last person that had her, the group, were the fire station, and they just didn't do so good. They do fires really well, but taking daily recordings, they didn't really do it very well. So we had to shut the station down. There was too much missing data. The ladies from the library, Christine Rowe, heard me on the radio and called me on my cell phone and said, you know, the library might be interested in doing this. We talked to them, and they agreed, and it takes a little bit of work. They have to go out every day and record the highs and lows and any snow and any precip, and they said, we'd do this. So Lisa Verzella, who is our co-op person, she and myself went out and dug the trenches and buried the wiring and put the climate station in, and it's not much. But if you go to the library and you look off to where they have the patio on the west side, you'll see like a little beehive on a pole. That's the temperature sensor. And then we have the precip can there also. And the ladies are doing a fabulous job for us. They're going out and taking measurements every day, so we have a climate record for Park City. And it's critical with the ski industry, with climate change. Are we getting warmer? Are we getting drier? Are we getting wetter? We didn't know when people would ask because we didn't have a climate record. Well, now we do, thanks to the ladies at the library. So they deserve a lot of credit for that.
That's awesome. Well, the forecast that I read off from the National Weather Service that we've got bookmarked here at KPCW, it takes temperature readings from the Park City Golf Course, which really is not reflective. It's a little bit cooler there always.
Yeah.
I mean, or at least the thermometer that we have mounted, and of course it's, I mean, it's a pretty decent thermometer outside on the north end of the building.
Yeah.
Always warmer, like 10 degrees.
Yeah. You need to make sure you have standards when you set up these climate stations. It needs to be, well, to continue the record, we had to have it at this similar elevation, because remember, we had this a long time ago at the Marsac building with the radio station, and then it moved around. But it's always been roughly the same elevation and the same latitude at the same distance. The one at the golf course is a little bit higher or a little bit different than where we are. The temperature sensor here is on the outside of the building, which retains the heat, so that's why it always shows warmer. So it's important that you have standards when you set up a climate station, so it's not next to a parking lot and it's not in an area that may block rainfall with big trees. And it took us a while to kind of move this around. Dave Gunderson, who's the project manager for Park City, said, well, you know, we can't put it here, we can't put it here. And then we'd say, well, we can't put it too close to the road. And once you get a spot that meets all these criteria, and if you can continue the record, then that's where you install it. And then that's the standard.
So can we start using the temperature gauge from the library, or does the golf course stay?
The golf course stays, and that's more of a weather station. The one at the library is a climate station. So we'll get the record, and we can look at the trends. Is it getting warmer? Is it getting wetter? But the one at the golf course is fine to use for precip to see what the golf course got. And then once the ski season starts, then the ski patrolmen fire up all their weather stations all throughout the mountain and get them running. And then we can use that for weather conditions. But a climate station is a long-term record, and that's what we needed.
Okay. Anything else?
You know, I think that covers it. I think we're good. Hopefully some more bigger storms will hit us, and we'll be on our way.
Okay. Brian, hey, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie.
It's Brian McInerney again, Chief Hydrologist with the National Weather Service. KPCW News Time now, 8:34. Good morning. Well, tomorrow night you'll have the opportunity to help hundreds of children in Africa go to school and have access to clean water and health care. Joining me in the studio, I have Thad McGowan and Kelly Third. They're the organizers of a fundraiser to benefit the Gabriel Learning Center in Nakuru, Kenya. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So when and where is the fundraiser?
It's at the Boneyard in Bonanza Park at 6 o'clock from 6 to 10.
Okay. And what's going to happen there?
We're going to have photos from the children of Gabriel's school. When we were there this summer volunteering, we gave the cameras to the children of the orphanage, and they took some great photos, and we're going to be auctioning off some of the children's artwork to fundraise for the kids that you see in the photos.
All right. So what kind of cameras did you let them use?
Simple point-and-shoot cameras, yep.
Yeah. Something that was nice and easy for them to get a hold of and have some fun, yeah.
So what brought you to Kenya then?
I'm a longtime resident of Park City, but I've been dating Kelly for a few years, and Kelly has a connection in Kenya.
Yeah, I've spent about, over the last 10 years, multiple trips back to Kenya, and I've worked in various fields of community development, and I'm a nurse by trade. So a good friend of mine started this orphanage a few years ago, and I thought while I was in Kenya for an internship with school, I thought let's go and spend some time at the orphanage and see what they're up to and what a spectacular organization she's managed to create in a few years. So
these are orphans. I mean, it sounded like it was a school.
It is as well. So there is an orphanage on the same site. That orphanage has space for about 35 kids. There's about 30 kids there now. And then about 250 kids come every day from the surrounding area. And it's quite a low-income area. And they come to go to school there as well. So there is a school and orphanage at the same location.
Yeah, so kids have to pay to go to school in Kenya?
No. They have to pay for fees such as their textbooks and their desks and their uniforms and things like that. And even that minor amount can really be too much for many families. So this school is free of charge for all the children in the neighborhood.
All right. So you just got involved via Kelly then?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Tell us a little bit more about the photos that people are going to see and the price of those.
So we're going to have about 20 photos. Some of those are actually collections of maybe three photos that go really well together. They're all taken by the children, and they're quite colorful and fun and kind of goofy, some of them, showing really what their day-to-day life is like. And it really gives those children an opportunity to share what their community is like with other people and what's important to them. The photos will all be accompanied with a $20 gift certificate for framing should people want to frame their photos that they get. And we're going to do like a raffle style auction so people can buy tickets quite affordably and put them in the photo that they like, and then we'll draw for the photo. So it just keeps it nice and affordable for everyone and kind of fun, a little bit of competition to see who's going to get the photo they want.
Oh, okay, great. So they're what, 8x10s? Or
they are 8x10s, and they're not framed. They're just raw photos, and we did that because we thought everyone has their own way they'd like to display photos. So that's why we included the gift certificate as well.
All right, so how much are you hoping to raise?
Oh, well, we really hope for...
We're hoping for a couple $1,000s, yeah.
No cost to get into the fundraiser,
no
though.
No cost. And we also have some silent auction items from local businesses that contributed. Mm-hmm. And so that stuff will be out there also.
Okay. And then are you making annual trips back? Or?
Well, we'd love to. It's expensive to get there and back. But we're quite close with the director of the school, Susan Saliba. She actually lives in Australia. She's a good friend of mine. And we're in close contact with her. So I'm sure we'll be making trips back. And I think... Dad's hooked as well, so it's my fourth trip. I'm sure it was not his last. So
yeah, maybe not next summer, but the summer following, maybe. So yes.
Yeah. So how did an Australian get started in all of this?
She and I met volunteering in a similar neighborhood in Nakuru. They have quite a few low-income neighborhoods around Nakuru. And she and I met, and she thought, you know, I think I could start my own orphanage. There's such a need here for more schools. And so since 2007, she's been hard at work, and finally, 2 years ago, she got to officially open her orphanage and school.
Oh, great. Okay. Again, the fundraiser happening tomorrow, 6 to 10 p.m., the wine dive there at the Boneyard, and everyone's invited.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Yep, that. Kelly and Than, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, in just one day, more than $1.3 million was raised in the annual Live PC, Give PC fundraiser. In the studio with details about how we did that and who benefits, I have Ollie Wilder, the program's director for the Park City Community Foundation, along with board member Mike Ruzek. Good morning to both of you guys.
Morning.
Morning.
So, Ollie, what was the final number?
I'm going to let Mike give it to you. Let's go, Mike.
So our final number was $1,348,668.
And that was how many donors?
That was 3,293 donors.
All right. Any idea how that compares with a year ago?
So last year, it's about 310,000 over last year on the total, and not quite sure right now on the number of donors, but I'm assuming it's higher.
It definitely is higher. This is the first year we've ever been over 3,000 donors.
Wow. And how, I mean, what do you attribute that to? Was it just better planning? Was it just more people know about it? Or was it the prizes that were being offered? Or
I think it was a couple of things. One, I think every year there's more and more traction where people are aware of Live PC, Give PC, so that helps. Second, I think there was a lot of, we had more nonprofits this year participating, 86 versus 73 last year. And I think the nonprofits are understanding what this day can really do for them, and they're really taking grasp of that and activating their board members and their constituencies and whatnot. And so we saw a lot of matching grants. This year there was 290,000 plus just in matching grants alone that the nonprofits raised. So good work all the way around.
Yeah. So is that the matching grant money figured into the total?
It is.
Yes, it is. And there are also some offline gifts that people received via check and otherwise that get rolled in as well. So this is really a nice grand total, but it's comparable to past years. You know, last year we raised $1,035,000. This year we had a big goal, $1,234,567, and we kind of had our fingers crossed. We didn't know what's going to happen. And it just got blown out of the water.
Yeah. So given that, what do you do for next year?
Please don't ask me that yet. we're just trying to think about it.
Because you're more than 310,000, like you said, I mean, from a year ago, and then still, what, over 125,000, nearly 125,000 over your goal.
Right. And I think that there's room for growth. I feel like this community is there to support these nonprofits. And as each Live PC, Give PC comes around, more people get aware and realize, hey, this is an opportunity to help make this town even greater than it is now. And so I do think there's room for growth, but don't pin us down on any specifics yet.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I mean, the big winners, as always, it seemed to be trails and pets winning out over people.
Well, in terms of the leaderboards, one thing we did differently this year, we had an all nonprofits leaderboard. And you're right. Mountain Trails Foundation came in first on that one. Nuzzles & Co. came in second. And Summit Land Conservancy came in third. And they each get a cash prize for the number of donors that they were able to bring to the table. But this year, we had four other mission-based leaderboards that were in different thematic areas. And so 12 other organizations will win prizes as well.
Cash prizes.
Cash prizes, exactly.
Right. So we had backcountry.com supported the Protect Where We Play, or Places Where We Play leaderboard, and Recycle Utah, the Swanner, and Utah Avalanche Center won on that leaderboard. And there's a Caring for Each Other board that was Tesoro, I believe.
Yep, Tesoro Foundation.
And that's the Peace House, the People's Health Clinic, and Planned Parenthood. And then there was a Keep On Moving board that was sponsored by Snow Crew, I believe, and that's the NAC ID1 Foundation and Team Park City United. And Lighting Up Lives and Minds, which was sponsored by, I believe,
the Marriott Foundation.
And that was PC Ed, KPCW, good job, and Mountain Town Stages.
So how much money are we talking about in addition for being one of those top three?
On the all nonprofits leaderboard, the prizes are $2,500, $1,500, and $1,000. And on each of the other leaderboards, they're half that. It's $1,250, $750, and $500. And what's great about this is, you know, the nonprofits, one of the ways that they motivate their donors is say, help us win prizes. And this year, more organizations did win prizes, so it was realistic for them to put out that kind of motivation.
Yeah. So interesting that, well, like a nonprofit that I noticed, People's Health Clinic, I mean, they had fewer donors but were able to raise more money than, say, like KPCW. So that's pretty impressive. They're just collecting bigger chunks of money when people are making their donations.
We saw that with a few organizations. As an example, even at PC Ed, they had less than half of the donors that Mountain Trails did, but they were just right about there with their total dollar amount. And so I don't know what to attribute it to, but you know, everyone did a great job, and ultimately we were successful this year, and the coffers are full at 86 nonprofits. So.
Yeah. And how did the Community Foundation fare? Because you do ask for a tip at the, you know, as people are checking out.
We do. We did well. You know, we're proud to be the hosts of Live PC, Give PC, and to organize it. And people do support Park City Community Foundation as well. And so we're very happy with that and very grateful to them. I don't actually have a round number to give you on that. One of my colleagues will tell me that later today. But I think we did very well, and we're very happy. And, you know, the sponsors this year were very generous, and we had more sponsors than before. And these leaderboards were a great reason for them to help support it. So I'm really proud of the community, both the donors and our sponsors, for what they did.
Right.
And I better mention Park City Mountain and Epic Promise were our presenting sponsors. And Bill Rock was great on stage on Friday night as we were celebrating the big number.
Awesome. So when did you actually hit that?
It was somewhere after 10, maybe? Somewhere.
10, 10:30.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And then the rest, the another 124,000 came in 2 hours. Wow.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing end to the evening, and we crossed the original goal a little earlier than we even thought we would. We crossed $1 million somewhere around, I don't know, 7 p.m., 6 or 7.
Even before.
And so we just felt like there was amazing momentum. So it was a relief. Halfway through the day, you're sort of sitting there saying, what's going to happen? And then at the end of the day, you go, wow.
Yeah. So with the credit card information being taken up front, you'd have a great collection rate then, right? I mean, it's money in the bank.
Going to Nordstrom's today with some new cards, so it'll be great.
No, this is absolutely money that is, you know, received and available for the nonprofits. They'll actually get the cash a little later as it gets, you know, there's some processing time and so forth. But within a month, they'll have the money available to go, and they'll use it for the important things that they do.
Great. All right, anything else you two wanted to mention?
Ultimately, just thank you to the entire community and everyone that came out Friday night to celebrate with us. We had a great time, and let's do it again next year. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
Mike and Ollie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's 8:48 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the third annual Bling Fling to Benefit Peace House will be held this Friday and Saturday. In the studio with details, I have Jane Patton along with Ann Johnson from Peace House. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So this is actually something you've been working on a while, collecting the bling.
We've been working a year collecting bling.
All right. So what have you got?
Oh, we have beautiful jewelry, lots of fun jewelry, scarves, all different kinds of scarves, some more summery and some winter things, and purses, and big ones, small ones, carry bags. It just is amazing, the thousands of different items that we have. So it doesn't matter what your taste is. We've got something that you'll like.
All right. So you're going to set it all up Friday and Saturday at the Park City Community Church?
Correct. Yes, it's downstairs in the community room of the church, and Friday we open the doors at 10 o'clock, and we're going to fill the place up. We're really excited. Our volunteer who has sort of taken this on is Cappy Bliss, and she's worked tirelessly amassing this stuff. We've got a room over at the Prospector Conference Center where they've been able to mark and sort and that sort of thing. And tomorrow we start loading it all over to the church and then working to get it all displayed and nicely staged.
So everything is marked. People aren't going to be making offers on stuff.
Correct. There are no offers.
All right.
But there is sort of a bit of a deal that if you spend $50 the first day, you can get a coupon for discounts to spend on the second day.
All right. So the jewelry and the purses and everything, it's not all gently used. You do have some new product?
Brand new stuff. Some brand new things that we've collected from merchants that, you know, just decided, you know, we like to donate this to you, and so brand new as some jewelry, some fine jewelry, never been worn. And then we, let's see, we have, and then scarves, we have a few belts. We found belts were difficult because it's something somebody has to try on. We want to stay more to the accessories that you don't have to try on. But there are some belts because people are very generous and they give us belts.
So give us an idea, I mean, in terms of prices. I mean, you're going to find a nice purse for a third of the cost?
Oh, at least a third of the cost. We have $5 purses, $10, $12 purses. Nice designer items that... It's sort of unbelievable that people would give them up.
All right. So, again, you also charge, so you at the door, just to get in and look?
Yes, it's $5 per person.
All right. And how much do you hope to raise?
Well, I think that Cappy's goal, Cappy Bliss, who is the chair of this, I think her goal is $45,000.
Yes, she'd love to see that amount, but... that's a, you know, actually the sky is the limit.
So how did you do with Live PC, Give PC?
We did really well. We were, eighth in overall, and in our category, we were the top leaderboard. So we were really thrilled. We have, some wonderful people that supported us and we felt very good about the day. I think that the Park City Foundation and those that worked on Live PC did an amazing job. They really got the word out, and our number of donors increased. I saw a partial list, and we have some new donors. So we're just thrilled.
Any news with regard to the campus construction?
We're coming along and working on the plans with our architects, and we'll be working on preparing the application for our conditional use permit. So we're moving along beautifully.
All right. And then also kind of working silently still on the capital campaign. We haven't heard much about that.
Well, you'll hear about it as we're ready to launch it. But it's, you know, it takes a lot of planning and being prepared to do it so that we are able to inform the community about how important this is.
All right. Again, it's the Bling Fling this Friday and Saturday at Park City Community Church. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Jane,
come and join us.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Park City resident Emma Garrard just competed at the Xterra World Championships. These were held in Maui November 1st. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So how did you do?
I placed third, so I was really happy, and it was, a great experience.
Third overall in the women's?
Yes, in the division? Pro women's division. So
what does that entail?
So it's a mile swim in the ocean, and then a 20-mile mountain bike ride with a lot of elevation gain, and then a 10-kilometer trail run.
All right. So actually, Park City is a good place to train. Huh?
It is. No, with the elevation gain here, it's great. We don't quite have the humidity, but yeah, for mountain biking, it's great to train here.
That's awesome. So you had to qualify, though, to get there?
I did, yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell me about that.
So I did the whole U.S. Pro Series. So I qualified that way. There's four regional races and then the U.S. Championships that I won here at Snow Basin. And then, yeah, I was able to go to Maui because of that.
Because of the win in Utah?
Because of all, you qualify at one of the races. So my results were good enough to get me there. So,
all right. Okay. Yeah. So the best result then that you had in the qualifying, I mean, how did you finish?
So I won the U.S. champ. So that was a qualifying race also. So.
Oh, great. Yeah. Congratulations on that. So yeah, kind of in your backyard helped?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd you swim in Pine View Reservoir?
Yep. So, and then rode up to Snow Basin and then ran up there. So.
Yeah. Well, I was reading your blog about your competing in Costa Rica. I'm guessing that was another one of the regional qualifiers.
That was for the World Championships it was, but not part of the U.S. series.
Yeah.
But that was a great experience.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's like you had to be surprised that you even finished, given that, I mean, you started it off without a time chip. I mean, then it was like wanting to find that.
And that made Hawaii seem cool, that race. It was so hot there.
Well, and then you also had left your hydration pack before you got on your bike.
So first race of the season, you have some hiccups.
Yeah.
So luckily everything went well in Maui.
All right. So, I mean, what kind of temperatures were you talking about?
You know, it gets to the point where it's like 85, 90 degree humidity. So I tend to not even want to look.
So do you do this for fun or is there actually some money to be made?
No, there's really good money. I mean, most of the professionals that do it are full-time athletes. I'm pretty much a full-time athlete. I also coach for Park City Nordic, but there's prize money. And then I have some, you know, other sponsors that support me, which is great. So it's a pretty awesome way to make a living.
Oh, great. So what are you training for next? I mean, is this kind of the race?
That was the last race of the season. So, you know, my season started in March, so it's a pretty long season to stay focused for. So, you know, season's over now, but, you know, I'm really having to gear up for next season and then organize the schedule for coaching this winter for Park City Nordic. So although I have a little bit of a break and kind of can breathe and relax a little bit, you have to get going on all the other stuff that you put off while focusing on a world championship race.
Yeah. So the Xterra, I mean, is that kind of, that's the triathlon that you prefer to do then?
I do. Yeah. I think it's the best kind of triathlon out there. I mean, it's just, you know, riding a mountain bike to me is a lot more fun than riding a time trial bike, which is what most triathlons are, or a road bike. So yeah, I love it. All the courses are different and super challenging, and the people that do it are a bit more relaxed.
Great. Well, congratulations.
Thank
Good
you.
Job.
Thanks for having me.
That's Emma Garrard.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.